From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for the first weekend of June 2023. Checking the calendar, the Brewers are in Cincinnati for the weekend. Also this weekend, Pride Fest is happening at the Summerfest grounds. It's National Donut Day and Leave Work Early Day. That means you can skip out early and bring home a dozen donuts. You can thank me later. In Rochester, New York, four teens and two adults were charged with car theft. They called their guardian, who picked them up from the cop shop in a stolen car. Georgia DMV has issued a public service announcement about the newly launched Renew at Home digital driver's license. They require a photo, which you can take with your phone. There's just one catch. The Georgia DMV is asking their representatives and their residents to please wear clothes when you take your pictures. It's that time of year, senior prank season. Seniors in Maryland listed their high school on Zillow, the real estate website. Spacious 13,000 square foot building with 15 bathrooms, only asking $42,000 for the building. Yeah, the best part, a spokesman for the school system said no one was hurt, no property was damaged, and the kids were incredibly creative. So, I guess, so good for him. On the other hand, there's a senior prank that went way wrong at Williams High School in Burlington, North Carolina. Students broke into the school and poured cement into all of the toilets. The guilty kids will be banned from graduation ceremonies. Oh, anything but that. And finally, in New York City, just recently legalized marijuana. A small chain of three pizzerias called Stoned Pizza and Dispensary is adding THC oils to their pizzas, which is totally legal. They also needed a restaurant license and a certificate from the health department, but they forgot to get them, and they were shut down on their opening weekend. Forgetting. What causes that again? On the podcast today, we have Art Rothschild, Mike Helsel, Joel Driesing, and wrapping up the week, here's Kyle Tedding.
Well, thanks, Max, and thanks for sticking around long enough to record the open on the Leave Work Early national holiday here. Good week overall for the markets. Plenty to be happy about. The NASDAQ finished the week up 2%, closing at 13,241. The S&P 500 up 1.8%. That's 77 points this week, closing at 4,282. The Dow Jones Industrial Average up 669 points, up 2% for the week, closing at 33,763. For the year, the Dow now up 2.8%, including dividends. The S&P up 12.3%, including dividends. And the NASDAQ, an absolutely stellar 27%. Joel, maybe pretty good place to start this week. The employment report that came out this morning, I feel maybe like a broken record, more mixed news, some pretty clear good signs in that employment report that the economy is maybe a little stronger than we thought, certainly resilient, and yet some underlying data that shows that there's still some areas of weakness.
Yeah, Kyle, U.S. employers added more jobs in May than they added in April, than they added in March, so it's 3 months in a row that hiring is actually accelerating. The Washington Post called the 339,000 jobs added in May blockbuster. And you don't expect that this, you know, far into this cycle that we've been going through. And after 10 times the Fed raising interest rates to try to slow down the economy. So there's that. But also on the other part of the report is the unemployment rate shooting up from 3.4%, which was a decades-long low, to 3.7%. And that's actually kind of a big jump for that indicator. Now, usually the unemployment numbers that household survey that comes from isn't quite as reliable as the employer survey that shows the payroll numbers. But those are just examples of the mixed signs that we're getting.
And even within the salary numbers, right, hourly earnings up a little bit, more or less in line with inflation, and yet hours worked coming down a little bit. And so those two seem to kind of balance each other out.
Right, yeah. So it was 4.3% year-to-year raise in hourly employment pay, but it's only up like 0.3% from April. So it's kind of been steady the last few months. And remember, it was near 6% last summer. So so that's come down. So we're seeing signs that the Fed is having some effect at slowing the economy, but it's still stronger than what the Fed would like it to be.
You know, Art, all this comes at a time in which we seem to be talking ad nauseum about the potential for recession, right? That are we in it yet? Were we in it already? Are we going to be in it next month? Who knows? Ultimately, some signs that maybe the recession we're facing next looks a lot different than the last one or two recessions we've faced. But more importantly, you know, regardless of where you look in the economy, there's signs that things are maybe a little stronger than what maybe we thought otherwise.
Yeah, it seems like we should be closer to that recession, considering the stock market sold off last year anticipating it. But it seems like the opposite's happening. If anything, I think the economy is gaining strength to a certain extent under the surface. I want to come back to my comment about the Wall Street. You know, a bull market climbs a wall of worries. Last year, we had all sorts of worries. The market got clobbered because the Fed was raising interest rates. This year, it's like, here we go again. We have the same worries. The Fed, however, is getting closer to stopping raising interest rates. So the market's celebrating by driving, as you indicated, the NASDAQ up 27%. So it's huge speculation out there that things are actually going to be better, I think. And then today, the Dow went up twice as much on a percentage basis as the NASDAQ. So I'm not going to go out on a limb to suggest we're even going to have a recession. When Powell was asked about it in the news conference after they last raised rates, he said, I'm not sure we're going to have a recession. So if Jerome Powell, who's kind of driving, says he doesn't necessarily see one, I'm going to suggest I don't think we're necessarily going to have one. Let's hope, because the market's trading like we're not at this point.
We'll have one eventually.
Well, yeah, but it doesn't have to be tomorrow or the next day or the next day, and doesn't have to be very deep considering the strength of the economy.
Yeah, that's the other question is how severe it is.
Right, and when you look at all the cash that's out there, when you look at the deal that was just struck, another thing we're going to be talking about, obviously, there's so much fuel to continue to push this economy higher. We don't have enough people to do the jobs we've got, even though the unemployment rate, as you indicated, went up to 3.7. That's still low. And so, and there's so much money out there. And Mikey and I were talking about this earlier. You can get so much money just having money in money markets these days. So people have more money to spend. And we're also talking about what people are getting paid. People are getting paid more than they've ever been paid. The economy is bigger than it's ever been. So, yeah, we might have a recession.
And another one of those mixed signals is that the Conference Board came out with its consumer confidence survey this week, and one of the things that they found was that people's expectations are at a level at which, according to their years of experience, would indicate that we're going to get a recession soon. But it's been at that level for 14 out of the last 15 months, and part of what went into that is that people aren't feeling good about they aren't feeling as good about the job situation, and here we are at a very strong job market.
I'm going to blame the media for that. Okay, I mean, there's so much negativity, no matter which side you're on, that people are just bummed out about this recession that's going to happen and how bad it is that inflation is terrible and the Fed's raising interest rates and, oh my, I might lose my job. But they're spending like drunken sailors. We've talked about Vegas. I mean, record revenues in Vegas. Yeah. Among other things. So people are spending at restaurants. They have to keep hiring.
It's almost like they're trying to talk the recession into existence.
Right, right.
That's all they're trying to do.
So that can change on a dime when people start looking at those 401k statements and find that they're making a whole bunch of money.
Does that also help mitigate the effect of a recession when it comes, if people are expecting it for a long time? And then when it finally gets there, they're like, oh, okay, here it is.
You know, I think, Joel, it really depends on what we do to prepare. If we expect it, but we do nothing, and stocks run at, you know, 10% a year leading into it, you go, okay, well, maybe we were a little over-optimistic about how well this was going to go. And I think, Art, to your point, you know, last year was a very rough year for investors. Perhaps that was the expectation for where should we be pricing things if things slow down from here, if the economy is going to slow? And so I think in many ways, investors were preparing last year for the likelihood of a recession this year, maybe later, maybe early next year. And what it really sets up for is the thing, Art, you were talking about with all this cash that's sitting out there. Now, a lot of that is cash because you actually get paid to hold cash. But some of it is cash because, hey, you know, I'm not super excited about the idea of putting this to work if recession is the concern. And the same for potentially hiring employers, maybe a little less eager to hire people they might otherwise have hired, but they're desperate right now. And so if you're a worker, you're concerned about what the labor market looks like. Normally, you're not jumping jobs. You're pretty happy with the one you have. Well, okay, if you're expecting recession, maybe I'm going to hunker down and just and power through the current role I'm working in. That hasn't been the case either. And so I think the labor market is really telling the story right now of what we should expect when it comes to economic growth. And that is, yeah, things are going to slow, but maybe it isn't the full-blown recession. Maybe it isn't the thing that everybody's worried about. And of course, Mike, maybe the thing that would have made us a little more concerned is if we hadn't come to the big agreement we came to this week on the debt ceiling, not quite signed by the president yet as we record this, but it sounds like Saturday we'll have a deal fully signed, fully negotiated, fully agreed upon. And with uncertainty always being the thing that makes investors nervous, we have a little more certainty on one of the big things that's out there.
Yeah, I'm just happy it got, you know, taken care of so we can get back to talking about inflation because we haven't talked about that enough. No, you're right. I mean, we've said on this show thousands of times that markets hate uncertainty. And this was the biggest thing out there when it came to uncertainty. And the fact that they got it done, I mean, makes people feel better. Obviously, you saw the markets the past 2 days. Investors have jumped all over and been happy. I really enjoyed the fact that everyone was patting themselves on the back for actually doing their job. That's a pretty sad low bar that they cleared, but that's where we're at right now. But yeah, I mean, once you take away that big kind of uncertainty hanging over the market, you can then get back to kind of the fundamentals of the market that Art and Joel were talking about, the amazing jobs report, the amount of cash that's out there. And when you start looking at the fundamentals of the market, now that we have passed the debt ceiling, they look pretty good.
Yeah, they look certainly a lot better than they did with that uncertainty hanging over our head. You add in that in a couple of weeks we'll have another meeting of the Federal Reserve. A lot of expectations for a pause, but I don't think at this point in time it really matters all that much if it's another quarter point now or another quarter point the next meeting. More or less, we've reached the end of whatever this rate hike cycle looks like, at least near term. You know, it doesn't mean that rates don't go higher. It doesn't mean that eventually they don't go back down. But it seems like at least the Fed's now ready to start to digest. Here's what this really means for the markets. Here's what higher interest rates ultimately will settle in at. You add in that we're going to have consumer price index numbers the first of the 2 days of the Fed meeting. And so they'll have a pretty good understanding of how inflation has evolved with some pretty updated data. You know, I think we can now spend, Mike, as you say, the next week and a half talking about inflation and the Fed without having to worry about that debt ceiling conversation.
Very exciting. Let me ask you this. Do we call it a pause or do we call it a skip? Because now we're getting into a semantics argument that I'm just very excited to have.
I think you're going to get a little bit of all of those. It's really back to Art's comments on the media. It really is about how we choose to frame this and how we choose to kind of navigate those expectations.
Yeah, and that having been said, at some point I'd like to hear a round of applause for the Fed. I think they're doing a tremendous job of communicating. As of a week ago, there was an expectation that they were going to raise 0.25%. And they tamped down those expectations just by having a couple of governors come out and say, well, not so fast here. Maybe it's appropriate for us, and this is nothing new. They've said this before. But maybe it's appropriate for us to just see the lay of the land, see how much damage the rate increases have done, and not to mention the bank crisis, which was another one of these walls we had to, you know, climb back in March. I'm not sure that's going to be as bad as they've alluded to the fact that it could have been. And again, communicating very well, despite media warping things. And again, I can go back to Greenspan. I mean, the guy spoke some foreign language that the markets never seemed to understand. Jerome Powell, you know, speaks in plain English. He tells you what you should expect, and then he delivers on those expectations, although they have to change periodically. So wonderful job, you know, for the Fed, hopefully accomplishing an objective I don't think that's ever been done before in quite in this way, quite so dramatically, if it works.
Yeah, and let's not call it a comeback yet. Of course, there's plenty of things that can go wrong, but I think if anything, the lesson from this rate hike cycle is that communication is probably the most important piece. Yeah, your actual movement on interest rates, what you choose to do with accommodative policy, those all matter, but the way you choose to communicate those choices is what ultimately drives how the investors feel about it. And they've done about as good a job as you can expect, given how quickly rates had to come up, given how high inflation went, and how much they had to do to combat it. And so I think, you know, you're right. Certainly the Fed has done an excellent job here. They've got a little more work to do, but so far, so good. You know, Joel, we talked about, I think, the big economic indicators this week, a couple more on the list that maybe are worth mentioning. What stands out to you?
Well, productivity, it's a revision of how fast productivity had improved or not improved in the first quarter of the year. And it's interesting because what we're learning is that if we measure productivity since this business cycle, so since the fourth quarter of 2019, just before the recession that was caused by the pandemic, we've averaged an annual rate of 1.1% productivity, which is historically the lowest ever in 75 years of data that the Bureau of Labor Statistics has been covering. So that's pretty profound, and that's something that's not easily, you know, turned around. It's a function of the output that we're getting from the economy and the number of hours that people are working. But that's something that, I mean, if you think of a glass of water being shaken up, that's what COVID did. It takes a while for that to settle down.
And I think what's interesting to me about those productivity numbers is we go through these cycles where productivity just skyrockets. You think about the advent of the personal computer, and it made workers far more productive with their time because they had these technological resources available to them. We may be in the early innings of another one of those revolutions with our ability to rely on artificial intelligence for a lot of work that otherwise would have taken a few people to write something down. And so, you know, we don't often talk about what the economic consequence of those changes are, but productivity growth is one of the best ways. If you're not going to get more workers, one of the best ways to grow your economy is just make those workers more productive. And so, you know, I think it's a number we look at quite a bit to see how healthy is the economy, how much growth should we expect.
And the demographics, just the sheer lack of bodies to, you know, to be provided as workers might be one of the things that's spurring that productivity.
It absolutely is. And we see that data in the employment numbers, right? That when you look at labor force participation, how many people in this particular age bracket participate? Well, when the prime age workers are participating more in the labor force, but your participation rate overall is still going down or staying the same, it tells you your workforce is getting a little bit older. And we've been dealing with that now for the better part of the last 10 or 15 years as the average worker, the average baby boomer that is entering that 65 to 70 age range is saying, hey, I'm ready to retire now.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, especially with the uncertainty that came up through COVID, you know, more people are sort of saying, is it really worth my while to go back to work? Is it better for me to sit this one out? And the whole problems of caring for others who they can't care for if they're working full time.
Yeah. And again, I think ultimately, you know, we care about economic growth. We care about what that has an impact on in terms of markets. It's why we talk so much about the economic data, Joel. It's why we talk so much about the Federal Reserve and interest rate policy. And most importantly, you know, it's why I think we look as closely as we do at all those numbers. So with that, we enjoy doing the program for you. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.